Welcome to The Onion Opinion. Before we start the show, just a quick word from our sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Onion Opinion. Two guys, two countries, one opinion. No, kidding. One topic, two guys, two opinions. That's what? Our slogan. That's what we're sticking with. So, sweetie, tell me, how was your week?
Hi, Bastian. I was wondering, when was the last time we actually had one opinion? Probably never. How was my week? It's been a stressful one, to be honest. It's been one that was full of a lot of meetings. And it was, I'm sure, like, other people can relate to that. My biggest challenge right now is that I'm working mostly with people based in the US, and I'm based in Europe. And that time difference just kind of forces me to stay up late. But at the same time, I have a hard time getting up late. Like, I'm starting early and I'm ending late. So the combination of two bad things that leads to very long work days.
No, no, that's a lot of complaining, because I know your working style and the nap time you're taking. So I tell you what happened to me, something very interesting. So I live in China, and we have been under this travel ban coronavirus for three months now. Now that it's slowly opening up, for the first time since end of January, I've been on business trip again. So I actually went to a city not so far from here, and I took the train, which was exciting. So
before you go into it, just one thing: did you inject yourself with antibacterial or like surface cleaner to make sure that you're virus free? Did you do that? Did you follow Trump's advice of injecting stuff that you otherwise would just clean the bathroom with? Did you do that? Did that allow you to travel again? Did you hear about that?
I heard about it, but I didn't do it. At this point of time, I'm just ignoring all the news that comes from that part of the world, because it's just too entertaining. No, but so the funny story was, normally, you know, China is actually quite a nice place to live in, but so with now no domestic infections, all the infections coming from abroad, which means for a lot of people, it's the foreigners that bring in the virus. So when we were on the way, even on the train, or the train was fully booked out, the person sitting next to me got up and was standing for 1 hour train ride because they were too scared to sit next to me. Yeah, it gets better. So we arrive at the train station, and they have like those full hazmat suit people there take temperature. Okay. So they're doing a really good job of controlling it. And then, so we go through the temperature check. You have your little QR code that tells you exactly where you have been with your cell phone, because, well, it's a privacy is a little bit different here. And so I have everything. I walk through the gate, do the temperature check, show my QR code, everything fine. I want to walk out, and one of the guys in the hazmat suits comes and is like, "Hey, you, maybe you go into this channel." So they moved me to a different channel where they did some extra checks, which was selectively for white people. Really? I arrived at the factory. Yeah, so we had the driver pick us up, went to the factory. The factory guy opens the door. In the front, I had my Chinese colleague sitting, no problem. He looked back, saw me, and in Chinese, he just said like, "Oh, you have a foreigner with you." And it started a 15-minute procedure on my health, my travel history, and I had to prove it using those apps that we now have. So, long story short, it's the first time that I don't want to say it's hard racism, but it's definitely a form of racism. And as a white male person, that's something very rare that we experience. So I thought that's it was true. Kind of funny and also super scary, because it was purely based on my looks, we are not used to it.
There's so many questions in my head. Like, is that something that is, like, obviously you said it's the first time, but is that something that other people also, like, is that only you because they just don't like your face, which I can totally understand? Or is it is that also happening to other, like, because it's not only white people, like, it should be also like people with other colors of skin or like other from other parts of the world, right?
Yeah, I mean, as a white person, you're still lucky. So it's not just me. It's, you see it. Say, we were just coming back with a friend who came by subway. And ultimately, he was talking nicely to an older gentleman. And then the older gentleman was asking, like, oh, where are you from? So his friend said, oh, I'm from Italy. And then he asked him, oh, I'm from America. And you could see people around him in the subway moving away from them. So it's, wow. It's not mean, or it's not trying to be offensive, but it's just born out of a fear. But I think as a white person, you're still extremely privileged. There is a lot of cases, especially in the southern provinces, where black people, or especially Nigerians, had a lot of problems. They got kicked out of their apartment, or wow. Because there was a case where one Nigerian had an infection and went to a restaurant, and then there was a kind of a spread within this small community. And so ultimately everybody went into hyperdrive. And again, you know, we're talking about 1.4 billion people. A very small minority is just very, very scared. So they not always making, let's say, the most sensitive decisions, and they were kicking people out. There were people living, like, sleeping on the street because they got kicked out of the apartment that they're paying for. So it's wow. Super strange times.
That is really sad. I mean, looking at Central Europe, where I am, we certainly, like, especially in the beginning of this coronavirus debate, we had, I think there was at least some discussion, there were some people talking about that around, like, Chinese people on the streets and, like, how they felt like it could be a potential threat. And so I think there was at least some form of some subconscious racism. I think it's exactly what it is. Like, you're looking, you're filtering for the race. The only thing that makes you, as somebody who says that, say that, is that this person looked like they're from a different race / from a different part of the world, which I think by definition is racism.
But you know, I think Europe is even worse, because in Germany, if I would see an Asian person, I would expect that person to be German. Just like at some point in time, some Asian person came over, I wouldn't necessarily presume it's a Chinese person. Whereas living in, let's say, in China, not even China, also if you live in Japan or Korea, if you're like Caucasian, you're 99.9999% definitely not born there. Or you are a foreigner.
I'd be interested in the statistics about that, but yeah, like, I understand what you're saying. Wow, and like, how do you deal with that? Like, how does it make you personally feel? Like, it's probably one of the first times, as you said, that you, as a Caucasian white male from Central Europe, got, like, experienced racism. How did it make you feel?
I mean, that's the interesting part. I kind of enjoyed it because I really take it.
Okay.
I take it as an, no, because I don't take it offensive. I understand where the people are coming from. But I also think it's very interesting on how, you know, it gives me perspective of a lot of things that, again, racism is very difficult for us to feel or to experience. So for me to have that experience, actually, I'm saying, like, oh, okay, actually interesting. You know, like, people moving away from you in the subway, or you being randomly picked out for another temperature check. That's, again, that is not hurting you or anything, but, well, it makes you feel once, separated.
Yeah, but like, just so, imagine, like, yeah, it would happen to you, like, every day, and, like, the police would pull you over every day.
I mean, the police is one thing, but, for example, being in the crowded subway, if every day I would get extra space, not that bad, but nevertheless, you know, it makes you think, it's like, what the hell? That's not cool. That shouldn't be the case. So it also gave me a lot more perspective. And then I started thinking, it's like, wow, I wonder how it's in Europe, where even we, you know, in the state media, you see a lot of reports stating like, oh, they're kind of Chinese people being targeted for being Chinese, and because that's where the virus potentially originated from. And so it's like they bring it and everybody from there is sick. And it's just very, very absurd looking at this whole topic and how quickly people can go down to their basic instincts and just say like, okay, everybody that looks like me is safe. Everybody that looks different is dangerous.
Yeah, that's true. All right, Buzzin, how about we take a super small ad break, and then we'll be back after the ad break with another topic that I read about this week that I just wanted to go through with you. Sounds good?
Perfect.
All right, we're back. That story you told me before the break was really interesting, because I also have a hard time like putting myself into the shoes of somebody who's experiencing racism. But yeah, like it's weird if it's happening to you all of a sudden.
Well, next topic. Tell me, what did you
read? Next topic. I did. So I drive a Tesla. I do really.
Hashtag unpaid promotion.
Hashtag unpaid promotion. Please, Elon Musk, give me a free Tesla. No, that's probably not going to happen. I'll also take a rocket or a flamethrower, whatever comes out of your factories. In fact, I might actually just buy a solar roof if I get my own home. But that's a different topic. No, what I wanted to say is, I'm watching a bunch of content right now that features Elon Musk. And I'm also listening to a lot of podcasts where he gives interviews. And he rarely gives long-form interviews. Have you ever watched a Tesla presentation, like where they unveil the cars and stuff like that?
Yeah, I love the pickup truck unveiling.
Man, like that is just hilarious. Yeah, if you haven't seen that, you've got to watch that. But point is just that I love the way he talks. Like, it's really hard to listen to if it's on video. For some reason, it's a lot easier to listen to if it's on a podcast. And I just love his opinions. I feel like that guy is just like fearless. Like he just like his he probably is a robot that's been sent to us to like save the world. And you can think what you want, but like I like his way of approaching things, which is a really like engineering way of approaching things. And I was listening to the Joe Rogan Experience, which if you haven't ever like listened to that, it's one of the best long form podcasts out there, I think. Every episode is like between 2 and 4 hours, but it's amazing, especially if you're on a long drive, or if you want to go out and like work out for half a day or something like that, and you just constantly listen to it, and you're able to like really follow a very nice long discussion, including Joe Rogan, who's like a self-proclaimed he's like a podcast dude, and at the side he does like wrestling commentary. Like he's a wild character, basically. Like they drink, they smoke pot on the podcast. And to get back to the point, I really liked how he talked to Elon Musk and like the topics they talked about. And one of the main things was basically the way that humans work, and like it made me think a lot about like how I have to work with my colleagues and like the people around me every day. And the sentence that really stuck with me, and I'd love to get your opinion on that, is that really like we're just monkeys that have this cortex kind of attached to their brain, and it's really not our modern human cortex, like the part of the brain that's the youngest part that like has all the rationale stuff in it. It's not that makes the decisions and calls the shots. It's really the monkey brain that does the decision making, and like the cortex is basically just trying to make the monkey brain happy and like try to rationalize everything that the monkey brain wants to do anyways. And like just that fact, and like his way of talking about it, made me understand change management so much better.
All right, that was an epic monologue. So what was the question?
The question is just, is that something that you also, like, how do you, like, especially when it comes to, like, changing processes and, like, working with people in a different way, changing things around, like, how do you approach that for the most part? Do you go facts first? Do you go, like, I don't know, is there any framework that you use?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it depends on, first of all, it depends on which field you're working in and what kind of characters you're working in. For us, I mean, for me, it's pretty simple. I deal with highly intelligent people. So no matter what I change first, I need to get the people's buy-in. Everybody, typically 90% of the people are afraid of change, no matter what change it will be. Change is a deviation from the norm. The norm is the best. So people are scared. They're scared of the future and so on and so forth. So in the end, you have to get them on board. And that's purely from a business point of view now. You try to get them on board. If they reject it or they don't want to come on board, then based on my experience, the sooner you find a new opportunity for them somewhere else or you remove them from your team, the better.
That's kind of,
otherwise you have people blocking you.
Yeah, I mean,
But survival of the fittest is hard. The point is, if you have somebody on your team, I mean, if you have somebody, how do we do it in our school system? In most school systems in Europe, after like some formal primary education, you divide kids in lower tier and higher tier education systems. That's also pretty much a selection based on your skills and based on your mindset. So using, if you know you are at point A and you know everybody has to go to point B, but some people just don't want to move from point A, then the solution is pretty simple. Either you find a new space for them within the company or within the organization where they can stay on close to point A, or in the end, you don't have a space like a point A left. So you have no space for them left. Then you have to move them out because it's also not in their interest to be in point A and constantly have to work at point B. That will not make them happy. That probably results in depression, burnout, and resentment.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. Did you know that there's actually discussions right now, especially for the German school system, that like missing or failing classes should be abandoned? Like exactly what you're just talking about and the example you gave, that like people miss classes and we split them up. That's actually something that's maybe going away at some point. Because people feel like it's unfair.
Yeah, but what's unfair about it?
I don't know. Maybe some people are just like late developers. I certainly was one.
Hey, first of all, both of us, because we both almost failed twice a class and just skipped through part on the last bit, and we still made some promising career, not too shabby careers in the end. But the point is, if you're late bloomer and you get bad grades and that's why you don't get like promoted to the next grade, that actually speaks exactly for the theory that you should repeat the class, because this gives you more time to develop or not.
Well, I mean, if I'm an employer and I look at somebody's resume and I see that they took longer to get their high school degree or they took longer to get their bachelor's degree, and sometimes like you can't even like study a certain subject, like look at how you study to become a physician, at least in Central Europe and in Germany. I think it's the same thing across a lot of countries in the EU, at least. You have to have a certain GPA, point grade average, to actually be able and be allowed into these kind of programs. And I feel like it's kind of unfair, because like, does your math degree in high school, should that determine if you're a good doctor? Probably, like, I don't know if there's any correlation. Like, as of today, I haven't seen any like statistical proof that your high school degree and like the rating you get there actually correlates with how good as you are as a professional.
No, for sure not. But now we're switching topics. I mean, one thing is the change management, where I say if somebody is not willing or able to change, then it's against their best interest and your best interest and your team's best interest to force them to a certain position and keep them on board. If you're now talking about a school grade system and so on and so forth, I mean, how much of your master degree are you actually using in, at work?
Yeah, exactly. That is exactly the right question.
I have a CMA. We both have a master's degree, and probably my ninth grade math is what I use the most. I have a CMA, so I'm a certified management accountant, and right now in my job, maybe less than 1% is related to this field. So it's, for me, it's not necessarily that a good grades tell you if you're amazing or not, but good grades, and that's the same concept in at least in European universities, is good grades and a diploma, they are a proof that you can learn by yourself complex topics.
That is, and that you're driven to do something that you would otherwise not do. You can motivate yourself.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, that's true. One more topic we don't fully agree on, I guess. And
Because you are softy and I'm a little bit more
hardline.
I'm probably more the corporate asshole than you compared to you.
Fair point. All right, guys, this was our more or less structured second episode of The Onion Opinion. We'd love to get your feedback, so please use the Google form and give us some feedback. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you around next time.